Right, so as I was saying, you have interacting particles, there's a many, many problems. You have quantum coherence, then there's a quantum problem. And the quantum many-body problem is a problem where you have many particles, and usually they're identical, and you need to worry both about their interactions and about the coherence of the wave function. And that's because the wavelength of the particles is such that it's greater than the separation between the particles. So if particles are very far apart compared to their wavelength, then you have little wave packets which, you know, seen from each other, they just look like almost like point-like particles. So you may still have to worry about the interactions between them, but you don't have to worry about interference effects. Okay? But if the wavelengths are big, this is just, you know, a cartoon, then not only you need to worry with the fact that the interactions these kind of wave functions, the particles these wave functions represent, are interacting with each other, but also the fact that there's interference. And you have things like, for example, you have to worry about the Pauli exclusion principle, the fact that the wave function has to be anti-symmetric with respect to the exchange of particles, okay? And things like that. And the quantum many-body problem emerges in that case, where both quantum mechanics and interactions are very important. Okay? And the thing is, second quantization is the language of quantum many-body theory, the kind of basic language. Actually, there are several languages, one on top of each other. So you can first do second quantization and then write functional integrals, and that's a whole other language, but we're not going to get to that. But it's a language you use to describe large collections of quantum mechanically identical particles. I'm going to motivate it by considering first a simple case of one particle, and then we add more particles and see how, if we work in the usual way that would be normally called first quantization in this context, then things become very complicated very quickly, and we need to find out a better way. So let me try to do that. So suppose we have a particle in a box, a problem I hope you will all be familiar with. So I have a box of size length L in all directions, and inside that box I have a particle, right? So then, of course, I have a Hamiltonian, and there's a wave function. I'm considering a stationary situation, so the particle is in some stationary state, and the stationary state is characterized by a wave function which depends on, you know, the position of the particle. And say if my Hamiltonian is simply a free electron Hamiltonian, so 1 over 2m h bar over I gradient squared. So that's just the Hamiltonian for one free particle, right? Then I know that, well, there are many possible solutions, but one I can write is the psi of r equals e to the I k dot r. And usually I put a factor in the front, 1 over L to the 3 halves. That's just to make sure that if I integrate the probability of finding the particle anywhere in the box, then I get 1, okay? And of course, you might argue, well, this solution is not quite right at the edges of the box, because if it really is a box, the probability amplitude should go to 0 at the edges. And in fact, this kind of solution would correspond to periodic boundary conditions, where instead of requiring the box to be 0 at the edges, I require it to have the same wave function at the edge as on the opposite edge, right? And for a 1D line, that's all right. That's like making a ring. But for a 3D box, that's a bit hard to imagine, because you cannot connect this side to that side, that side to that side, and so on. But the point is, we're always going to be dealing with a thermodynamic limit. So L is going to be very large, okay? And if L is very large, it cannot possibly matter what the boundary conditions are at the edges of the box, because that's a negligible part of the system. As the box becomes larger, the surface area goes like L squared, while the volume goes like L cubed. So eventually it doesn't matter. Okay? Anyway, that's just single particle quantum mechanics. And the point is, what happens when you have more than one particle? And particularly, what happens when you have many, many particles, right? So this wave function, I can call it K, because it has a set of quantum numbers, which is the wave vector. And of course, the momentum is a well-defined quantity, and it's just h bar times K. So suppose I have, and of course, momenta in this box arrangement are going to be given by 2 pi over L nx, ny, nz, where these three numbers are integers, right? And so now suppose I have two particles, okay? And imagine that they are still non-interacting. So I have a Hamiltonian, which is just the sum of the Hamiltonians for two particles. So 1 over 2m, h bar over I. Now the gradient with respect to the position of the first particle squared, plus the same for the second particle. Now you will remember that because this is a sum of something that depends on the first particle and something that depends on the second, I can separate it and I can write the solutions psi of R1, R2 as the product of a solution of the first Hamiltonian times a solution of the second one, okay, where this would have some wave number k1 and that would have some wave number k2. And each of those can take the values that I found before, right? Now if I write it like that, so this is where the problem comes, that quantum mechanics has a little bit more built into it than just what you get in the single particle equation. Because if I write the solution like that, this is actually not a valid solution if the two particles are identical. That's all right if one of them is an electron and the other is a proton. That's fine. Well, apart that, I didn't include their spins, but if we ignore that, that would be okay. But if I have two electrons in my box, this wave function is not valid. Can anyone tell me why? Not some. You're not allowed. You know everything I'm going to say. Yes?
Is it because of the exclusion principle?
For the exclusion principle, exactly. I could have, for example, K1 equals K2. And then the two particles would be in the same state, exactly. And if they are fermions, we know that's not possible. Two fermions cannot be in the same state. But this is a perfectly valid solution of my Hamiltonian. So something's wrong. We're not including something, right? And what we're not including is the statistics, the fact that if two particles are identical in the quantum mechanical sense, then this reflects in what happens when I swap their coordinates. So suppose I have let's think of an arbitrary wave function of two particles, and these two particles are identical, right? Then if they are really identical, then if I calculate the probability that the one particle will be at R1 and the second particle is at R2, that must be exactly the same as the probability that the first particle is at position R2 and the second particle is at position R1, right? Because that's if you want, the key element of quantum mechanics beyond what you can say about single particles. When you have more than one particle, if they are identical, they are indistinguishable. So I can only have wave functions that have this property, that if I swap the coordinates of two identical particles, I must have exactly the same probability, right? Nature really doesn't know which particle is which. Now, this is, of course, just the complex conjugate of that wave function multiplied by the wave function, and that's also the complex conjugate multiplied by the wave function. And then you can see that, therefore, the only way that this is going to be true in general is if, when I swap the particles, I'm actually adding a phase, multiplying by a phase factor of the wave function. So e to the I phi psi of R2 comma R1. Right. So so in other words, when I exchange the two particles, the wave function acquires a phase. As long as that's the only thing that happens to the wave function, then that will be true. Because when I take the magnitude squared, the phase goes away. Okay? And now I can also say, well, what happens if I solve these two particles again, right? So then I get that e to the I phi, and then I get back where I started. Okay? So now if I compare that to that, it's clear that e to the I 2 phi must be 1, which means that phi has to be an integer number of times pi. Right? So this is just going around in the kind of polar plot, and therefore this is telling me that when I go by an angle 2 phi, I go back to the beginning. So phi could be pi, in which case 2 phi is 2 pi, which is a complete revolution, or it could be any number of times pi. All right. So that means that e to the I phi has to be either plus 1 or minus 1. Okay. So in other words, the indistinguishability of particles means that when I swap two identical particles in my wave function, I must get either the same wave function or at most a change of sign, right? And if I get the same, my particles are bosons. If I get a change of sign, my particles are fermions. By the way, this assumes commutativity, which seems a very intuitive thing. But if I cannot commute these things, then I could get phi, which is neither of those, and then I don't get a fermion or a boson, I get anyons, but that's a completely different thing. Anyway, so now we know what's wrong with this wave function, because in general, if k1 and k2 are two different wave vectors, when I swap r1 and r2, so when I exchange the two particles, this wave function does not stay the same or change sign. It's, in principle, completely different, right? This could be, for example, e to the ir, and this could be e to the i2r. And obviously, depending on where I put the r1 and where I put the r2, I get a different function. So that wave function is not right, even though it is a solution of the Schrödinger equation, which means that this postulate of particles being indistinguishable is an additional thing you have to put on top of the Schrödinger equation to demand that a solution is correct. And fortunately, once you have a solution of that type, a kind of mathematical but not quite physical solution, it's very easy to construct a solution that actually also based in indistinguishability. All I need to do is, I know that if this is a solution, then any linear combination of things like this is a solution as well, because the equation is linear. So all I need to do is add to this the case where I've inverted the two particles, I've swapped the particles, right? With either a plus or a minus sign, depending on whether I want the wave function to be symmetric or anti-symmetric. I expect for most of you this is still revision. So I start with my wave function where the first particle has wave vector k1 and the second particle has wave vector k2, and then say I add, or let's, well, okay, so I said there are fermions and bosons, but because I'm mostly a solid state physicist, from now on they are only going to be fermions, simply because it's very cumbersome to keep track of the small differences of signs and counting factors for fermions and bosons. So I'm just going to do fermions, and then if you want you can consider the case of bosons and see how things would change. So anyway, if I, for this line, I'll do both fermions and bosons. If I add or subtract the wave function that has the same, the same quantum numbers, but with the two particles exchanged. So there's a particle with wave vector k1, but now it's the second particle, and a particle with wave vector k2, which is the first particle. Okay. Then you can clearly see, in the plus case, this function is actually symmetric under the exchange of the particles. Because if I swap R2 and R1, this term becomes that term, and that term becomes that term. So obviously, since the sum doesn't depend on which order I sum things in, I get the same wave function. So this would be a perfectly valid wave function for two bosons, two identical bosons. So for example, two helium 4 atoms. Okay? And similarly, if I pick the minus sign, then that's good for fermions, because if I make this R2 and that R1, then that's what I wrote there, right? But without the minus sign. And if I also swap the coordinates of the particles here, that becomes what I wrote there, but with a minus sign. So both terms have changed. Both terms have become the other with the sign change. So the wave function has just changed sign under the exchange of the two particles. So that's a nice recipe. If you have non-interacting states of, so single particle states, and you build the states for a many particle system by just taking the product of many of those non-interacting single particle states, then you can then construct a state that is actually a physically valid solution by just adding all those types of states, swapping all the particles, and putting the right sign in the front. So basically, if instead of two particles I have three, then there are six possible reorderings of the particles. And I have to add all of them equally if they are bosons. And if they are fermions, I have to add all of them. And for everyone I add, I put a sign in the front, which is either minus if I've done an odd number of swappings of particles, or plus if I've done an even number. Okay? And as I said, let's now forget about bosons and focus on fermions, because electrons are fermions, and the properties of metals and basically every material, the electronic properties, are due to electrons moving around. So.